File 69.
Not satisfied with the economic conquest of the world, but also demanding that it must come under his political control, the Jew subdivides the organized Marxist power into two parts, which correspond to the ultimate objectives that are to be fought for in this struggle, which is carried on under the direction of the Jew. To outward appearance, these seem to be two independent movements, but in reality, they constitute an indivisible unity. The two divisions are the political movement and the trade union movement. The trade union movement has to gather in the recruits. It offers assistance and protection to the workers in the hard struggle which they have to wage for the bare means of existence, a struggle which has been occasioned by the greediness and narrow-mindedness of many of the industrialists. Unless the workers be ready to surrender all claims to an existence which the dignity of human nature itself demands, and unless they are ready to submit their fate to the will of employers, who in many cases have no sense of human responsibilities and are utterly callous to human wants, then the worker must necessarily take matters into his own hands, seeing that the organized social community, that is to say, the state, pays no attention to his needs. The so-called national-minded bourgeoisie, blinded by its own material interests, opposes this life-or-death struggle of the workers and places the most difficult obstacles in their way. Not only does this bourgeoisie hinder all efforts to enact legislation which would shorten the inhumanly long hours of work, prohibit child labour, grant security, protection to women, and improve the hygienic conditions of the workshops and the dwellings of the working class, but while the bourgeoisie hinders all this, the shrewd Jew takes the cause of the oppressed into his own hands. He gradually becomes the leader of the trade union movement, which is an easy task for him, because he does not genuinely intend to find remedies for the social wrong. He pursues only one objective, namely to gather and consolidate a body of followers who will act under his commands as an armed weapon in the economic war for the destruction of national economic independence. For, while a sound social policy has to move between the two poles of securing a decent level of public health and welfare on the one hand, and, on the other, that of safeguarding the independence of the economic life of the nation, the Jew does not need to take these poles into account at all. The destruction of both is one of his main objects. He would ruin, rather than safeguard, the independence of the national economic system. Therefore, as the leader of the trades union movement, he has no scruples about putting forward demands which not only go beyond the declared purpose of the movement, but could not be carried into effect without ruining the national economic structure. On the other hand, he has no interest in seeing a healthy and sturdy population develop. He would be more content to see the people degenerate into an unthinking herd, which could be reduced to total subjection. Because these are his final objectives, he can afford to put forward the most absurd claims. He knows very well that these claims can never be realized, and that therefore nothing in the actual state of affairs could be altered by them, but that the most they can do is to arouse the spirit of unrest among the masses. That is exactly the purpose which he wishes such propaganda to serve, and not a real and honest improvement of the social conditions. The Jews will therefore remain the unquestioned leaders of the trades union movement so long as the campaign is not undertaken, which must be carried out on gigantic lines for the enlightenment of the masses, so that they will be better able to understand the causes of their misery. Or the same end might be achieved if the government authorities would get rid of the Jew and his work. For as long as the masses remain so ill-informed as they actually are today, and as long as the state remains as indifferent to their lot as it now is, the masses will follow whatever leader makes them the most extravagant promises in regard to economic matters. The Jew is past master at this art, and his activities are not hampered by moral considerations of any kind. Naturally, it takes him only a short time to defeat all his competitors in this field and drive them from the scene of action. In accordance with the general brutality and rapacity of his nature, he turns the trades union movement into an organization for the exercise of physical violence. The resistance of those whose common sense has hitherto saved them from surrendering to the Jewish dictatorship is now broken down by terrorization. The success of that kind of activity is enormous. Parallel with this, the political organization advances. It operates hand in hand with the trades union movement, inasmuch as the latter prepares the masses for the political organization and even forces them into it. This is also the source that provides the money which the political organization needs to keep its enormous apparatus in action. The trades union organization is the organ of control of the political activity of its members and whips in the masses for all great political demonstrations. In the end, it ceases to struggle for economic interests, but places its chief weapon, the refusal to continue work, which takes the form of a general strike, at the disposal of the political movement. By means of a press whose contents are adapted to the level of the most ignorant readers, the political and trades union organizations are provided with an instrument which prepares the lowest stratum of the nation for a campaign of ruthless destruction. It is not considered part of the purpose of this press to inspire its readers with ideals which might help them to lift their minds above the sordid conditions of their daily lives, but, on the contrary, it panders to their lowest instincts. Among the lazy-minded and self-seeking sections of the masses, this kind of speculation turns out lucrative. It is this press, above all, which carries on a fanatical campaign of calumny, strives to tear down everything that might be considered as a mainstay of national independence, and to sabotage all cultural values, as well as to destroy the autonomy of the national economic system. It aims its attack especially against all men of character who refuse to fall into line with the Jewish efforts to obtain control over the state, or who appear dangerous to the Jews merely because of their superior intelligence. For in order to incur the enmity of the Jew, it is not necessary to show any open hostility towards him. It is quite sufficient if one be considered capable of opposing the Jew sometime in the future, or using his abilities and character to enhance the power and position of a nation which the Jew finds hostile to himself. The Jewish instinct, which never fails where these problems have to be dealt with, readily discerns the true mentality of those whom the Jew meets in everyday life, and those who are not of a kindred spirit with him may be sure of being listed among his enemies. Since the Jew is not the object of aggression, but the aggressor himself, he considers as his enemies not only those who attack him, but also those who may be capable of resisting him. The means which he employs to break people of this kind, who may show themselves decent and upright, are not the open means generally used in honorable conflict, but falsehood and calumny. He will stop at nothing. His utterly low-down conduct is so appalling that one really cannot be surprised if, in the imagination of our people, the Jew is pictured as the incarnation of Satan and the symbol of evil. The ignorance of the broad masses as regards the inner character of the Jew, and the lack of instinct and insight that our upper classes display, are some of the reasons which explain how it is that so many people fall an easy prey to the systematic campaign of falsehood which the Jew carries on. While the upper classes, with their innate cowardliness, turn away from anyone whom the Jew thus attacks with lies and calumny, the common people are credulous of everything, whether because of their ignorance or their simple-mindedness. Government authorities wrap themselves up in a robe of silence, but more frequently they persecute the victims of Jewish attacks in order to stop the campaign in the Jewish press. To the fatuous mind of the government officials, such a line of conduct appears to belong to the policy of upholding the authority of the state and preserving public order. Gradually, the Marxist weapon in the hands of the Jew becomes a constant bogey to decent people. Sometimes the fear of it sticks in the brain or weighs upon them as a kind of nightmare. People begin to quail before this fearful foe, and therewith become his victims. K. The Jewish domination in the state seems now so fully assured that not only can he now afford to call himself a Jew once again, but he even acknowledges freely and openly what his ideas are on racial and political questions. A section of the Jews avows itself quite openly as an alien people. But even here there is another falsehood. When the Zionists try to make the rest of the world believe that the new national consciousness of the Jews will be satisfied by the establishment of a Jewish state in Palestine, the Jews thereby adopt another means to dupe the simple-minded Gentile. They have not the slightest intention of building up a Jewish state in Palestine so as to live in it. What they are really aiming at is to establish a central organization for their international swindling and cheating. As a sovereign state, this cannot be controlled by any of the other states. Therefore, it can serve as a refuge for swindlers who have been found out, and at the same time a high school for the training of other swindlers. As a sign of their growing presumption and sense of security, a certain section of them openly and impudently proclaim their Jewish nationality, while another section hypocritically pretend that they are German, French, or English, as the case may be. Their blatant behavior in their relations with other people shows how clearly they envisage their day of triumph in the near future. The black-haired Jewish youth lies in wait for hours on end, satanically glaring at and spying on the unsuspicious girl whom he plans to seduce, adulterating her blood and removing her from the bosom of her own people. The Jew uses every possible means to undermine the racial foundations of a subjugated people. In his systematic efforts to ruin girls and women, he strives to break down the last barriers of discrimination between him and other peoples. The Jews were responsible for bringing Negroes into the Rhineland, with the ultimate idea of bastardizing the white race which they hate, and thus lowering its cultural and political level so that the Jew might dominate. For as long as a people remain racially pure and are conscious of the treasure of their blood, they can never be overcome by the Jew. Never in this world can the Jew become master of any people except a bastardized people. That is why the Jew systematically endeavors to lower the racial quality of a people by permanently adulterating the blood of the individuals who make up that people. In the field of politics, he now begins to replace the idea of democracy by introducing the dictatorship of the proletariat. In the masses organized under the Marxist banners, he has found a weapon which makes it possible for him to discard democracy, so as to subjugate and rule in a dictatorial fashion by the aid of brute force. He is systematically working in two ways to bring about this revolution. These ways are the economic and the political, respectively. Aided by international influences, he forms a ring of enemies around those nations which have proved themselves too sturdy for him in withstanding attacks from within. He would like to force them into war, and then, if it should be necessary to his plans, he will unfurl the banners of revolt even while the troops are actually fighting at the front. Economically, he brings about the destruction of the state by a systematic method of sabotaging social enterprises until these become so costly that they are taken out of the hands of the state and then submitted to the control of Jewish finance. Politically, he works to withdraw from the state its means of subsistence, inasmuch as he undermines the foundations of national resistance and defense, destroys the confidence which the people have in their government, reviles the past and its history, and drags everything national down into the gutter. Culturally, his activity consists in bowdlerizing art, literature, and the theatre, holding the expressions of national sentiment up to scorn, overturning all concepts of the sublime and beautiful, the worthy and the good, finally dragging the people to the level of his own low mentality. Of religion, he makes a mockery. Morality and decency are described as antiquated prejudices, and thus a systematic attack is made to undermine those last foundations on which the national being must rest, if the nation is to struggle for its existence in this world.